Hello and welcome to Largo, Florida Local. I'm Melissa Honeycutt, realtor and your guide to living, working, and playing in Mid Pinellas County. In today's episode, I speak with Tammy Swart, who recently moved from the United States to Puerto Rico, and she's going to talk all about her process of buying a home there, as well as what it is that makes this the Isla del Encanto. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the podcast. I am sitting in a beautiful patio with 70 degree weather. The sun is shining. You'll hear some monk parakeets in the background, maybe even some stray kitties or two. And I'm in this beautiful seaside town called Arroyo, Puerto Rico. And I am with Tammy Swart, who is best known for her blog, The Things We Did Today, and also her beautiful pictures on Instagram at Dos Libras in PR, which of course stands for Puerto Rico. But what I think she is most famous for is being my mom. So I get to interview all the best people in the world, and this is one of them. But the reason that we're talking with her here today is because she lives full-time in Puerto Rico. And so we're going to talk a little bit today about, you know, why she did that, what her process has been like, and so that she can kind of give you guys the best practices on if you wanted to do the same thing that she did. So talk to us, Mom, about why you decided to live in Puerto Rico, how you kind of got here.
Okay, well, first of all, I want to tell you what an honor it is to be asked to do this. And the why, we started out on a sailboat, a 45-foot Catalina Morgan, sailing the coasts of the United States, and then we went on down through the Caribbean, stayed in the South Caribbean for a while, and the original plan was to move on to Panama, where I had done some research and plan to go there to retire. But my husband, my partner in sailing, when it got time to go point the boat that direction, he said he did not want to go to Panama. He would prefer to return back through the Caribbean and go to Puerto Rico to live.
And just to pause for a second, if you guys are interested in hearing or reading about her adventures throughout her times in the Caribbean, she has extensively documented them, anywhere from places to go, things to do, things to see. And also, you know, what does it cost and what are the trials and tribulations of somebody living full time on a boat? Please check out her blog. It's thethingswedidtoday.com.
.net,
excuse me. Thingswedidtoday.net. All right, good.
Okay, so it didn't take me long to wrap my brain around the change. Puerto Rico is beautiful. There are so many things to do here. One of our questions we asked ourselves throughout the Caribbean is, could we live here? And Puerto Rico is probably the only one that the answer was yes, and that is for many reasons, because it's the best of both worlds. It has many of the conveniences of the United States, including some protections under law. Property ownership is easier here than it would be in another country. Had we gone to Panama, we probably would have rented, and that would be throwing money away. So I think we can get all of the excitement, all of the ruins and the waterfalls and the coastline drives and the mountain pools. And then there's the history, the music, the art, the culture that you find here. It's all very, very much going on here. Even though it's part of the United States, it's different in many ways. And we love it, and we have tried our best to embrace all of those differences. Some people come here. I think there's like a wave spreading through the United States after Hurricane Maria. Many people did not even know that there was Puerto Rico right over here. And so we've had an influx of Americans coming here, and some of them come with unrealistic expectations, and that's something you definitely need to look into before you decide to come here, because it is the United States, but it is not the United States, and in many ways it is more not the United States than it is. So we have the U.S. dollar, the U.S. Postal Service, we have a lot of U.S. franchises for food, and like we have Home Depot, we have Sam's Club,
Walgreens,
and we have Costco, yeah, all of those things. But a lot of the food franchises are Puerto Ricanized. Mm-hmm. They have some differences. There are some different things on the menu, and they have changed the food a little bit to make it more palatable to the Puerto Ricans, which is perfectly understandable. So the food here is very different. Usually you go out to eat and you see things that you're used to seeing on the menu. Well, here you see some things you don't know what they are. And but that's one of the good things, is trying new things and new culture.
I love that. So if you're coming here, embrace here. Very good. So you guys have bought and sold properties in the United States a few times, and you kind of understand that process there. You know, there's a contract, there's inspections, there's lending or cash buying, there's appraisals, there's, you know, what happens on the closing day, who pays for what as far as commissions go, and also things like, you know, once deeds and ownership, that sort of thing. So for somebody who's wanting to buy in Puerto Rico, what was your experience as far as, you know, the differences or similarities to the United States to buying here in Puerto Rico?
I would say, first of all, the difference is the way realtors work. Here in Puerto Rico, a lot of properties never go on the market. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are just sold by word of mouth or somebody's, you know, family member. So we do have multiple listing sites here. And while that is one place to look, getting here and driving around and looking is another option. And a lot of people have found properties in that way. Puerto Ricans are not extremely trusting of the internet, so a lot of times they like to do things a different way. And so the realtors, the process for realtors is that if you are going to list your home, you get a seller's agent, and they will do the advertising, of course, and then you drive around or you find the advertisement and you contact the seller's agent, and the seller's agent will coordinate a time to show you the property. If she or he has multiple properties and you're interested in those, you can make a day of it. But more often than not, the multiple properties you might want to see are listed by different people, and you do not get, in many cases, a buyer's agent, because the seller's agents here don't want to split a commission. And so they don't want to work with a buyer's agent. There are some cases in which you can do that, and probably in the metro area that is a little more common.
And you mean San Juan metro area?
San Juan, the bigger city parts of the island, but in the outlying towns and the mountains and some of the smaller towns, that's probably not the case. Also, the seller's agent might require you to give them a retainer, like $450, $500. And that is just for taking you out. Mm. Because of the way that's structured, one person can show, you know, many, many houses, but it's that same one house, or many people, but it's that same one house. And so they, in order to get paid for their time, they charge up front, essentially.
Because since there's not a buyer's agent and they're not getting paid at closing for representing you in that way, to open the door, they're charging you a fee.
Okay. They only get money if they sell you that property that they showed you.
Gotcha.
And that's, yeah. They won't ever be able to get a part of a property that you buy it from another listing agent.
Correct.
So you don't have a signed contract with a realtor for yourself.
As a buyer. Gotcha.
Right, as a buyer. You definitely need to have a lawyer. There's real estate lawyers here. They typically would have you pay up front a retainer, probably different pertaining to what price range you're looking at. Ours was very reasonable, about $1,500, and that's from start to finish, that's what we paid her. And she was invaluable in watching out for our interests. We were able to get a buyer's agent, and she was able to show us the homes that we were looking for. We were looking in a very specific area, all researched on the internet, and we really lucked out with her. She walked us through all of the processes, some of which are the same, some of which are very different.
And so you said before that there aren't really buyer's agents because there's no way for them to get paid. How did this particular realtor become your buyer's agent, and how did she get paid?
My lawyer, real estate lawyer, recommended this woman, and I told her that I told the lawyer that I couldn't find somebody. I couldn't get anybody, and because I was buying from Grenada, sight unseen, without even coming here, I was looking on the internet to find properties. The condo units that we ended up buying in, this unit was not advertised anywhere.
Oh, wow.
There were four units on the market at the time. One of them was advertised.
Hmm.
So my realtor came down here and asked around and turned over rocks and figured it out for me. And so she was able to coordinate with three of the four properties. The one property that was on the market advertised, that realtor would not coordinate
with
a buyer's
agent. Okay.
And so we had a friend who lived here. They looked at three of the properties. The third one we saw was the one. And we made that offer while the realtor was still here. And it was going to be a cash sale, so it's a whole lot easier. I told them when I needed my closing date to be, and if we could not get it closed by that date, we would have to drop it and start over because we were not here in Puerto Rico. And so it was very different for us than it is for a lot of people.
But it sounds like in order to help you in your situation, living abroad and not being able to come here to see the properties, that it was beneficial for you to have the real estate attorney, a buyer's agent, and then also friends here. And those friends were people that you met from the sailing community, were they not? Okay.
Okay. Right. Nice. Right. So once we made the offer, there was a little bit of quibbling. My realtor told me what I should offer to begin with. This property was a repossessed property owned by the bank.
Okay.
And she advised me, I mean, invaluable. Her expertise and her knowledge was just everything. It made it possible for us. The bank countered, and then we countered again because some things had been removed from the property that were in the pictures from the listing that she was able to get for us. And so they they caved. They said yes, and I still don't really understand why they did it, because this property had been on the market for 4 years. Mm. And suddenly one day we show up and make an offer out of the blue, and boom, boom, and they took it.
Yeah.
So.
And at this point, it doesn't matter why, because you got a great deal
exactly.
on a great spot. Exactly. You're happy.
Exactly. Now, that was a huge risk, because we could have, I did not see this property until the day I came here to close on it.
And let me just tell you guys, as an aside, that is not how my mother operates. She is a very, you know, calculated, planning person. And so this is just crazy to think that she bought something sight unseen like that. But my question for you is, these negotiations and these agreements, were they verbal or were they written?
They were all written on a single sheet of paper.
Oh my gosh.
It was a one-page contract that had the particulars and, of course, whether it was going to be a cash or a finance and all of those things, but, you know, just super succinct.
Nice.
And so back and forth was very simple, and it was all done on the internet.
What was the contract to close period? Like, how long did that take?
I started looking in October and didn't find this place until sometime in November. I don't remember the date, but it took me a while to get through. I went through several realtors and just several
communication gaps.
I mean, just.
But once you did get under contract, I remember you saying that you needed to be there by a certain date. Was there a time frame that they recommended to you and said, okay, there's no way that we can't, could they have just transferred the property to you in 7 days, or how long do you think they needed?
Being Puerto Rico, 7 days is not ever going to happen.
It's a slower lifestyle.
Things happen
the island,
slower
yeah.
here. But I did tell them, and it was about a month.
Okay.
And that, again, is
was pushing it.
Sort of unheard of.
Okay.
I have other friends who have bought property here for cash, and a month is just, you really have to be on top of things and be proactive and have a good realtor who's on top of it for you and is helping you, letting you know what you need to get done. And, I mean, it is possible. But then I know other people who have paid cash, and it's taken them 6 months.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Sometimes it depends on the property itself and whether there's a clear title.
A clear title is important.
Oftentimes,
sure.
There is not a clear title in Puerto Rico because of the inheritance laws.
Hmm.
And that, coupled with the fact that so many of the younger people have left for the United States, and they don't care. They're not looking back.
So there's no way to clear the title and get a hold of those people.
And so they own parts of it. And so we were lucky, and this was all clear. So it wasn't a problem for us. But sometimes that's a huge issue. And I think that's why you can drive through Puerto Rico and see properties just sitting there forever. And it's because they're... ownership is so muddy because people have died and people who inherited have died or moved or whatever. So it's a problem. And you do also have to get like a title search, mm-hmm. similar to what is in the United States. And you buy your own title insurance.
Okay.
I think ours was like $300 or something like that. So it's not bad.
You had an inspection done? Or?
We did not.
Okay.
We did not have any inspection or any appraisal done. We did not have to because we were not...
You're paying cash.
Because we were paying cash. It is my understanding that within the last year, or about a year or so ago, the law changed and it is required to get an inspection done now, even if you're done. I'm not sure if it's an appraisal and an inspection. The appraisal, you don't have to get because you're paying what you're paying.
Right.
But the inspection, I think you have to get one. I could be wrong about that, even on a cash sale. But the paperwork, let me tell you, I mean, I drove to a nearby town where we had a title office and they were handling the closing. They had a lawyer there. So there was a lawyer, there was a secretary, there was my realtor, and my lawyer did not come, but she was available by phone. But because all of the functions that needed to be performed by a lawyer could be done by the one at the title company. And so all of that was very easy. And we sat down to sign all the papers. And I will tell you, the last time I sat down to sign papers for a home was in Texas. And it was a stack about 2 inches deep. And it had crazy stuff in it. Okay, here it was maybe 10 or 12 pieces of paper, and all of them were in Spanish and English, and that is typical for most of the legal type documents here in Puerto Rico, even though Spanish is the primary language. They did the same. They had to go through everything, and I had to do the initials and the signing and all that, but it was only 10 or 12 pages. It was no big deal. And then we were done.
Was it easy to get your money to where it needed to be?
That we had all of our money in the United States.
Okay.
Some banks in the U.S. are reluctant to transfer wire, whatever, money outside of the United States proper. So you definitely have to check with your bank and find out whether or not they will wire money to Puerto Rico. Some banks consider that overseas, some are international, some banks do not, and that makes no sense whatsoever, so it's typical of your bank specifically. So that's something you need to check out. If you're going to finance it, it is my belief that I don't know for sure, but I believe that you have to finance it here in Puerto Rico. I don't think there are American banks that will finance Puerto Rican properties. So definitely a little bit of a different process, and it takes a while. And we have some neighbors who did finance another house, and there was a lot more paperwork involved, a lot more proving of things. But it's still doable. Still less hoops to jump through. The big thing here is the inheritance. And I've seen several people go through the whole process, buy a place here, own a place for several years, and have no idea about the inheritance laws, what's going to happen to that property when you pass. Now, if you're a married couple, it's less of a problem. If you have children only together, it's less of a problem. But when you get into blended families, or if you are buying as an unmarried couple, you're definitely going to want to talk to an inheritance lawyer before you buy the property, because in the States, you have more...
Each state has their rules about how properties are transferred after death.
But in general, way more autonomy. Here, they follow the Spanish, like it's still a holdover from when Spain owned the island or was running it. And some of those laws have continued, and they are forced inheritance to the children, the natural children of the deceased. And so if you have a blended family, it could get messy. If you have family members that you don't want to have inherit, too bad. Because unless you create a non-ownership type ownership, like a trust or something. Yeah. There are ways, but they're not easy, and you definitely are going to want to explore all of that regardless, because you can't just decide. Now, 1/3 of it goes to the kids, another 1/3 of it goes to your spouse if they're still alive, and the other 1/3 you can give it to anybody that you want. But that 1/3 is going to go to their children, to your children and their children you can decide in your will whether you want it to go to their children or the other. Well, I'm getting way into it. But definitely you're going to want to have a will if you own property here.
Okay.
Because that's it's a very different animal.
Which kind of leads to what you were talking about earlier, why sometimes there's problems with finding titles because of that one-third rule that of where the inheritance goes to. And if that gets split up between five different children and they're off in, you know, wherever it is, so, yeah.
Somebody could own, you know, 3% of your property, and who knows where they are. So it could be a problem.
Are there any other kind of things like, oh, I didn't realize that, or, oh, man, I wish I'd have known that, that you would probably tell people when they're looking outside of the things that you've already said that you can think of, you know, things to watch out for, things to be aware of, to kind of make the process run more smoothly?
Insurance is different here. When I was looking at my policy, it mentioned earthquake, which in California you may have that.
Sure.
I was like,
Florida. Yeah.
Oh, earthquake. Okay. Tsunami coverage. Mm. That's another thing. So we have different types of things. And I guess all over the world, you have insurance for the perils
of that area.
It's just that you just don't think about tsunamis much. But
until
so
you get here. Yeah.
But the insurance is forever changing, like it is in the States. Maybe not at quite a rate, but it's very much less expensive.
Hmm.
And the policy that we have here has a lower deductible for less premium, for higher coverage, better coverage than we had in Texas.
Wow.
My experiences was with Texas. And our automobile is on our homeowner's policy. So
it's
not two policies. It's one.
Is it the same? Do you also have to have hurricane coverage? Or
yep.
Are those separate policies or all included? Wow.
It's all the they did have flood coverage included up until the last year or two, and so now there's a separate policy for flood as it is in many of the states, but it's like super cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Super cheap. And the insurance for the cars, for all of the insurance that we pay, including the external policy for the condo, which is a separate policy, a master policy, we pay less than we did in Texas for better coverage with better deductibles. So the insurance craziness is just not really as bad here as it was there.
Nice.
Another thing that is important to know is about paying the taxes on your home. And that is very different from the United States. First of all, you have your property tax, and it goes through a company an entity called CRIM. Don't ask me what that means, but CRIM is the entity, and you have to pay the first, I don't know if it's 6 months, 12 or 18, but you have to pay the first portion of the property tax, unless it's already been paid, but because ours was a repossession, it had not been. So we ended up paying, I don't know, it was like $500. Then you go to the CRIM office if it's your primary home, similar to the homestead exemption in the states that we had in Texas. Only this is an absolute zero. The property value of the home is, of course, different based on whether it's coming from the tax entity or the, like, for sale, selling a property. The market value is higher than your taxable value. Well, the market value and taxable value here have an even wider gap. And where here, say a property's value is $175,000, the taxable value may be $30,000.
Mm-hmm. So that's just the land, basically?
I don't know any of the wise or
but that's great. You don't want to pay taxes on market value. You want to pay taxes on taxable
absolutely
value.
But even better in your favor is if this is your primary home, you live here according to like the IRS's residency rules, and you don't have another home somewhere else that you spend more time in, you pay zero property tax on the first $150,000 of property tax value.
Oh.
So you can buy a pretty nice house and not have to pay property tax until you reach that threshold. Now,
wow.
Whether that threshold is going to remain the same or not, I do not know. But when we purchased our home 5 years ago, that's what it was.
Wow, that's awesome.
So while the food costs, electricity costs, some of the things that you know, getting products here for building, furniture, all of those things could be higher because there's more cost in getting them here. That's offset a good amount by your property taxes and how different your payments for health insurance and auto insurance and homeowners insurance. So it definitely is offset, and I think in our favor.
Awesome. So that's kind of the, you know, meat and potatoes of how to buy a property, how to kind of get settled here. But what are some of the day-to-day things? Like, how do you create community here? You know, what do you guys do with your time? Where do you guys go? What are the reasons that you like to live here, and what makes your life enriching living on the island?
Puerto Rico is 100 miles by 35 miles. Almost a rectangle-ish shape. And we can drive the whole island in a day, but that's a long drive, and it doesn't leave much time for doing things. So what we have done is we'll do a little boutique hotel or a B&B in another part of the island, and that way we can drive there, see a few things on the way, stop, settle in, and then spend the next day exploring. And we're talking ruins, beaches, waterfalls, hiking galore. There's just a huge hiking community here. Another thing is the mountain biking. There are mountain bike trails that you can do if that's your thing. There's zip lining, there's caves. Mm-hmm. Unending beaches. My thing is sea glass hunting. I love to hunt sea glass, and a lot of people are into that. The food, the culture. I mean, there's museums, there's history galore. We like to visit some of the ruins, and I like to look things up on the internet first and learn about them, and then go to the place, and it makes it more of an enriched visit for me. And when I finish, and even when I'm blogging, a lot of times I'll learn even more about it. So that's pretty nice. And that helps me when we have people come visit. I can take them to some of our favorite places. And we have our go-tos. And then sometimes we've visited with people who come to the island, and we'll go wherever they want to go, and we'll stay on another part of the island. So...
When people are coming here, they usually ask me questions like, oh my gosh, do you feel safe there? Or, oh my gosh, don't they speak Spanish? Or, you know, like, what kind of address some of those issues, like those kind of barriers to access?
Okay, first of all, the safety. If you are in, oh, well, first of all, with safety, if you're a jerk, you're probably going to be in danger.
But you know that's everywhere, right?
Exactly. So don't be a jerk, okay? If you are respectful, and if you are open to embracing the culture, and you are not trying to bring your Americanism with you and your rights and all of that, if you just relax and let it come into you, then the people will open their arms and love you, and they will help you to do anything you need. They are so sweet, so kind. Yes, there are a few people who are bad here. We don't go out in sketchy areas at night.
But you know, that's in the United States too. I'm not going to go to New York City and, you know, go hang out in 3 a.m.
Absolutely.
So it's just, yeah.
But you know, most of the time, even if we did, nothing's going to happen to us. A lot of the crime that you hear about is localized between groups here, and they're not out to get tourists, and they're not out to get all of the gringos. They're just, you know, there's like gang things.
They're doing their own thing. Yeah.
But we hardly see them. And many of them are in, most of that action is in the metro area. But the metro area, and like especially Old San Juan and the tourist areas, they're heavily guarded. They have a lot of people there on site to make sure that things go well. And, you know, there's a Paseo La Princesa in Old San Juan, which is a lovely walk along the water at the port and around outside down below the El Moro. And it's an amazing walk. And we were there with a friend at night one time, and it's not always completely lit. And we asked a man standing there, a guard, a security guard, if it was safe to do La Princesa at night. And he said, absolutely, not a problem. And we went, and we never felt safe.
You never felt unsafe.
We never felt unsafe. I have felt unsafe more times in the United States than I ever have here. Mm.
That's powerful.
It really is. And you know what else? Racism is not as prevalent here. I'm not going to say there's not a little bit of it, but because the people here come from diverse cultures anyway, it's African and Spanish and Caribbean, all the indigenous cultures, the Taínos, the people are already a mixing pot. You know, the Spaniards, it's just a mix, and it's a rich mix, and you can't look at a person and know that they're not from here. There's just not the racism. You just don't see it. Everybody is just living in harmony together for the most part. We don't see as many people. I guess being poor is different here, because the people who don't have a lot of money, we do have a lot of people on welfare. Last I heard, it was like 47% are like on welfare here, but a lot of them live in homes that were passed down through generations from their family, so they don't owe any home
debt.
Costs, none of those. They may not own cars. They may, one person in the neighborhood might have a car.
Hmm.
But they don't consider themselves to be lacking or less. It's like the people here, have more of a sense of what is enough.
Hmm.
And they're not just chasing the dollar or climbing the ladder. And on Sundays, they're out having fun with their families.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of things are closed on certain days of the week because they enjoy their time off. They really do. And it's a joy to see the families on the beach just playing, and they'll come week after week after week.
And so you learned Spanish when you got here?
I have worked very hard to learn Spanish. And let me say, my experience coming from Texas, there is a lot of, there's a large percentage of the population is Hispanic, being as close to Mexico as it is. And so I felt like I had an ear for it. But something that I learned living in Texas was how I guess people who don't speak English are looked down upon, because the United States seems to think that if you come here, you need to speak the language, and the language is English, and so you need to do it. Well, I turned that around. Even though it is not required to know Spanish to live here, it helps. And for me personally, I thought that embracing the culture and moving here required me to put in an effort to learn the primary language. And the number of smiles and the open arms and warm hearts that my Spanish endeavors have won me are priceless. I will always try Spanish first. Whenever I came here to close on our house, many people here in my little town do not speak English or very little, and they are very reticent to do so because they're not comfortable.
In the same way that when we try to speak another language, you feel apprehensive about it.
Exactly. So if you ask, do you speak Spanish? I mean, English, the answer is most of the time, no. Mm-hmm. But if you just start in speaking Spanish, they will meet you halfway, and you will get a better experience than if you had just said, do you speak English? Okay, and then go on to the next person. I mean, you just need to be aware that you are not in the United States anymore, and Spanish is spoken here. In the metro area, in the tourist areas, in the hotels, a lot of the restaurants in the big cities, people will speak English. And a lot of times, even here in the sticks, if you start, like yesterday, we went to a little restaurant and started trying in Spanish, and the person helping us said he says you can speak to me in Spanish. I mean in English. So he. I think he wanted.
He did
to both.
Practice. He wanted practice, and he wanted you to practice. It was
exactly.
Really nice. I think that's probably the biggest thing that I see is that with American culture, we don't talk to our neighbors. We don't talk to people on the phone when we're walking down the street. We don't make eye contact. It's like we're just very protective of our space, and we're not having conversations, and we don't have that sense of community, and that's what I've seen. That has been helpful for you is, you know, everywhere you go, you just seem to, you know, want to engage and want to make eye contact and want to talk. So if you're an introvert, it might be a little bit tough to be around here.
Oh, you can hang for yourself too. It's not a problem.
You call everything.
But you can, my neighbor is better at me. She does not ever leave her house. She doesn't come home saying, oh, I met this policeman and he used to live in New Hampshire and now he's here and he got my phone number and he called to tell me to be careful about. So, I mean, you know, she just like picks up people.
I love it.
But you definitely can. You know, when we bought fish the other day, that was an enriching experience.
Absolutely. Learning about the life of a fisherman and how they kind of do that.
Absolutely. Everyone wants to share with you, and it's very nice. They're very proud of their culture.
As they should be.
Absolutely.
It's beautiful here.
And they are very willing to share, and they'll do anything for you. If you ask directions, they're more likely to say, come, follow me, I'll take you there.
Hmm.
And it's perfectly good to do that. So it's a very slow lifestyle. Some people are bothered by that. You're going to wait in lines. Medical care, you're going to wait in lines. You're going to, not even in lines, in chairs, you're going to wait. You might wait 3 or 4 hours. But let me tell you, when you go to that into that room with the doctor is going to give you an injection. The doctor might draw blood. The doctor is going to sit with you face to face, probably 30, 45 minutes. The doctor knows what's going on in your life. And you probably know what's going on in their life too. You know, are their kids going to college? Are their kids having babies? They're going to know those things about you. How's your grandson doing? Is he walking yet? I mean, it's just a unheard of face-to-face contact with the actual physician. You're not going to see... you're not just going to see the nurse, and the nurse comes in for a little bit. The nurse might do your vitals, but we have doctors who do the vitals as well. So it's just a slower pace. And while you wait for something, you're also going to get a better experience for it and the healthcare. The healthcare. I have a policy. I'm 60 years old. I pay $236 a month, and I have like $12 copay for the specialty care, $5 copay for my primary care, and I for my drugs, I pay sometimes zero, sometimes $5 or $6. I think I pay like $30 for my mammogram. I did have to pay $200 for an MRI, which was the most expensive thing I've ever had to pay for. Your copay for the hospital is $50 if it's out of network. It's zero if you're in network. I have a deductible, but it's not on everything. So I'm not even. It's like $200. So I'm not even. Maybe that's the radiology that goes to the deductible. But I mean, the prices are so much less. The drug prices are less, and you get to see a doctor for half an hour, 45 minutes,
wow,
however long it takes. And while if you go to the hospital, they're not going to have endless piles of sheets for you. I have just finished buying sheets for hospital beds to make a go bag for us, so that the next time we go to the hospital, we'll have our blankets and our sheets and our pillows, so we'll be comfortable. But then you got in and you were there for 5 days and it was free. So
wow,
there's trade-offs. I don't have a problem bringing my own sheet.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I would rather have my own sheet
than for my bill to be outrageous because...
Or that the sheet's been washed 70,000 times and been slept on by every germ known to man. I'm good with it.
That's funny. So I guess last question, as far as like transportation, is there public transportation? Is there... would you recommend people getting a car? Like, what's the situation there?
If you come here for a visit and you want to stay in the metro area, you're okay walking and with Uber. We do have Uber in the bigger cities. Not a lot of Uber in the outer outlying towns or in the mountains. There are taxis that will take you over the island, $125 from our side to the airport one way. There is some public transportation. There are some buses, but they're woefully unscheduled. They're okay. There is a schedule somewhere, but no. You can take the buses in the metro area, but outliers, no. There's actually even a train, and there has been talk about improving the train to increase the places that it goes, and I would love to see that.
That'd
because
be fun.
We did take a train once to avoid heavy traffic in Old San Juan. We got on the train in one of the outer cities, and it was super fun. Very clean, very underutilized, and a lot of times it was like on a track above the town, so you're like looking down out. It's super fun.
Just an experience. I love that.
For sure.
But you guys do have a car.
We have a car, and you definitely are going to need a car. Cars cost more here
because they're imported, quote unquote imported,
right?
Yeah.
And the resale value is also better here. You do have to watch out because there's a lot of unscrupulous sellers. But you know, that's with
buyer beware with
any used car. If you want to buy a used car, we have a it's called Auto Expressos, like your Sun Pass or whatever in Florida for your, we have a lot of toll roads. But they're like 50 cents to maybe 250 might be the highest one I've seen. And the roads are decent. They're always improving the roads. Traffic is troublesome sometimes in the metro area. Outlier areas, not so much. I will say that Puerto Ricans have a different strategy, which once you embrace it, it works to your favor. Like you will routinely see people turning out of the far left lane going right on a red light. Mm. I mean, it
pausing
just happens.
For stop you, signs.
People will stop and just chit-chat with another vehicle.
That's
and
wonderful.
You just stop behind them and you don't honk your horn. You just wait a few minutes and then you go on.
But then they also let you in if you're waiting in a long line.
Absolutely. Yeah. You don't even have to ask. They just
stop for you
and let you in and wave you in. So it's just very different.
Just relax.
Very relaxed.
That's basically what you're saying.
I don't know what you have to do to get a ticket here, honestly.
That's too funny. I'm sure there's somebody listening who would like to tell you. That's awesome. So that pretty much wraps up, you know, the home buying process and also why you kind of have enjoyed living here and some of the more practical things that people would want to consider when moving here. But, you know, what I can tell you from what I see is that you just have an absolute love of where you live.
So basically, whether you are coming here on vacation or if you're coming here to stay and fall in love with this paradise, the people are going to be the thing that you notice the most, that make the difference. They are relaxed, they are welcoming, they are friendly and kind. Whenever there's adversity, like the recent hurricanes and earthquakes that have devastated huge parts or entirety of the island, they work together. They don't just wait for help from outside. They galvanize into action groups and they collect things from those who give freely, and they make sure those things get to the areas and to the people that need them. There's a thing here on the island called La Brega. And La Brega is kind of hard to say, exactly tell you what it means, but it's basically you are working towards a thing that will never be completed. It's like the struggle. It's and we're all here just another day of La Brega, and we work together and we help one another, and life is just good here. And if you're willing to come here and assimilate and make it where you are one of the islanders, the rewards are just, I mean, there's just no way to even express. If you are one of those people who has to have things in such and such certain way, this might not be for you. But a little bit of adventure, a whole lot of open-heartedness, you're going to do fine.
Wonderful. This has been another episode of Largo, Florida Local with your realtor and guide, Melissa Honeycutt. If you would like to send me ideas on people and businesses and topics to discuss for this podcast, please reach out to me on social media at Keep Searching Honey on Instagram and Melissa Honeycutt Coastal Properties Groups on Facebook, or shoot me a text at 727-314-2120.